Let's cross now to our guest, Dr. Moavi Gali. Doc, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us on the show.
No problem, man.
And just
nice to have you.
It's wonderful to have you here. One of the things that we were just chatting about with our listeners is the value and importance of education. And we're looking at the increasing numbers of families in South Africa who are choosing alternatives to traditional schools. And they're not leaving the country, but they're leaving the traditional schooling system. Doc, what is driving the shift and why is it becoming such an important conversation?
Well, just 2 points. One is that we need to be clear that this article has been driven by an organization that drives online learning. So it's like a factory selling its own products and find an argument to it. So the second point is I work with systems, and we have 1.2 million learners across the system. There has been no significant shift at all. Quite frankly, the country is divided into what is called a three-tier system of education. The tier one and tier two is about between 15 and 20% of the learners in the country. 80% is the tier three. So the conversation is only about 20% of conversation of learners in the country, and it doesn't affect any of the 80%, and the 80% historically affects primarily the black section of our learners in education.
So if we're looking at it, just to break it down for our listeners, the 20% that's being discussed in the article, would you say that's the more higher end education in terms of affluence and cost versus the 80% that the majority of South Africans have access to?
Absolutely. And yeah, the 20, tier one and two is about the middle class and the more rich section of our communities.
Well, in reality, within South Africa, the middle class is extremely wealthy compared to those in lower income areas and lower income levels. I mean, it is a profound difference. So, Doc, if we look at education, if we can just touch on, from your side and your experience over the years, what are the real values that can be taken out of education? And what are the challenges then of potentially removing children from systems that are the traditional systems, as spoken about in the article? And what are potentially some of the advantages?
Well, firstly, education in particular, when you talk about the 80% of learners in the country, and I was part of those 80%, education is the only way out of poverty. There's no other way. And so if you don't get it in education, you're gone. You're part of a recycle survival poverty for the rest of your life. So education is absolutely critical. So if you teach in the tier three schools, the 80% of schools, as a teacher, your focus is far more than just getting kids through. It's about you save them. And in communities where I taught, it's about getting them out of the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how serious it is. So education is crucial. How we have not shifted the combination of work that especially in the 80% of schools, in particular the writer of it, the company that drives online education in particular, that particular approach has not been successful. One can add UCT online as massive problems because it's conceptualized within a middle class rich community understanding. And when you pull learners from poorer communities, you need to understand the contextual conditions that's going on. So like online, expect learners to not be, unlike school where you have all of your kids in the school and the gate is closed and all of the kids need to go to the class. There is an orderly way of responsibility. When your learners now go and do online, because the organization also deals with homeschooling. And so homeschooling in particular, no matter what kind of education you have, so you have in America or in the top countries in the world, not the top countries, but good countries in the world, you still have homeschooling because communities have a difference of opinion about what public education is offering. So one should not mesh and then push a particular perspective that is not big. This particular focus is probably a 2 to 5% bubble of learners that can benefit. And so I am not running down what they're doing. I myself have an online system and I use online not as to replace the school, but to support the schools. Because if online schooling is, or distance learning is great, then UNISA would have been the biggest university in our country, whether it's before 1994, after 1994. It cater for a particular section of it, and technically from education, there's a concept called heterogogy. It's called self-directed learning, is that you need online learners who drive their own learning. It's not the teachers who drive the learning, it's the learners themselves. Now, if you go to any school, any no matter even the poor schools, you can go and pick up two or three kids who will do well. But what, from a systems point of view, I'm asking, what's happening to the rest of the 37 that is at the school? So although that the article spoke about the 5%, I from a systems point of view, I'm asking, so what's happening to the 95%?
And something that's so important, and I've been very fortunate enough to see firsthand, going up into the Drakensberg Mountains outside of Richmond to these rural villages and rural schools, there's no electricity, there's no water, there's no cellular network, there's no internet connectivity. So it's not even about a device or internet connectivity. So many of our kids are growing up with no access even to electricity and the outside world. But there's the discipline and the structure within the school and the respect that's developed, the understanding almost of hierarchy, you know, perhaps where a grade 2 understands he has to be respectful of a teacher and a grade 10, because otherwise there can be certain challenges. In your experience, Doctor, what have you seen outside of the education curriculum? What have you seen school give the youth and give young learners in terms of preparing them for life and the real world?
That's I'm hoping to launch 3 volumes of books around the other work. So in from a technical point of view, what we've done in terms of the curriculum is what I call the software of education. So our software, our curriculum is comparable with any other country in the world, because countries nowadays Google and copy and do the same stuff that others are doing. The real challenge is the hardware, and the hardware is how you operationalize that. And so our country is suffering from the hardware. You go to any school in a township and a period is 60 minutes. But if you just spend with one class, you'll realize that of that 60 minutes, the class will, you will lose about 20 minutes out of the 60 minutes of teaching. Whilst the efficient school have just utilized all 60 minutes. Now, if you lose 20 minutes of 5 periods a day, that's an hour one day, times 5 days in a week is 5 hours, times 34 weeks in a year, you can do the calculation of that. And so, and if you lose that, so everyone is focusing on the software, and the minor difference between what the curriculum is saying in CAPS or in another country, it's minor. It's the major thing about the hardware that's going on in our schools. And so that's the focus, and hopefully that is what, and by the way, technology can play a major role of in terms of those kind of hardware stuff that is going. And so hardware can deal with registration of, instead of a teacher spending time 5 minutes to tick off on a piece of paper who's present and who's not, whilst another school use technology and with 10 minutes, 10 seconds, the teacher can identify, and the teacher on the system then don't need to tick off everyone. You just press one button and make everyone being present. That's the difference of the hardware that we need to focus on. We have the potential to fix the majority of those problems in our township schools.
Yeah, Doctor, as a final question, and if I may, a personal question, I think education is one of the highest callings. I think it's incredibly stressful. There's a lot of pressure. Not only are you sometimes fighting the students to learn, but you're fighting the system as well and the availability of resources. What has kept you engaged and involved and committed to education for so long?
Well, I've been in education for 40 years, and so I'm still at it. And and people around me say I'm supposed to be retired, and they use the words "supposed to be" in front of me. And so, what we're saying, if we get it right, we make such a huge difference in the lives of kids. Instead of sitting on the outside, and education, we can. The reason why I'm involved in education is that we have the potential to do it. And so I will, until I have no breath, I will keep on trying doing it.
That's such a lovely message to end the conversation on and the segment. And Doctor, I just wanted to say thank you again for your time. Thank you for coming on and sharing what you've shared. You know, education is a country's foundation for the future, and our youth are the foundation for our future. And the better and simpler the education is, the more youth can benefit from that. And as you said, not feel as if they're on the outside and not ultimately end up on the outside. That's Dr.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
Loved the conversation. Dr. Moavia Gali, education expert. We are talking about education in South Africa and the value of being in school.